This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, and welcome back to another live show on The People Speak. Today is Tuesday, November 29th. I am your host, Sophia Ray. Join us every Tuesday for live interview-style talk radio. The People Speak invites audience participation by calling in questions or comments during the show for our guests toll-free in the USA and Canada at 1-888-429-5471. Again, that number is 1-888-429-5471. For more information on upcoming shows and guests, log on to bbsradio.com/thepeoplespeak. Tonight's show is to raise awareness and bring attention to the extreme urgency of ongoing threats, violence, and violations against the human rights of the indigenous people of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, its members, and their future generations. Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has actively opposed the permitting and construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline by the United States of America Army Corps of Engineers since the tribe first learned of the proposal in 2014. The original proposed route of the pipeline proximity was diverted away from non-indigenous population in Bismarck, North Dakota, to instead unreasonable, insufficient impact the tribe, which imposes imminent threat to the Missouri River due to potential contamination by oil spills directly affecting the tribe's drinking water supply, the tribe's environmental and economic well-being, and as well would damage and destroy sites of great historic, religious, and cultural significance to the tribe. Here with me tonight is Morningstar Gali, who has been deeply involved with the cultural, political, and spiritual activities of her nation and urban Indian communities in the San Francisco Bay Area from a very early age. Morningstar Gali is deeply involved with the protests of the Dakota Access Pipeline at Standing Rock and has been trying to bring attention to the abuses and excessive violence by the National Guard and police against the protesters and tribal members. Welcome on the show, Morningstar. It's an honor to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for helping us get the word out about stopping the Dakota Access Pipeline.
You're welcome. It's an honor to have you on. You know, this is a very important show for me. You know, I know the protests have been going on since about April. This is a huge issue, and it's been going on for decades, if not longer, across many states with many tribes. Back in 96, I was a part of a movement back in Blackfoot, Montana. So this show, you know, it means a lot to me. So before we go into, you know, into the details of what's going on, can you give me some background? How long have you been there? And what's your role in the protests?
So I just want to acknowledge that the, you know, through the messaging that there's an awareness and we are trying to be very mindful and not calling it a protest, that it's not actually a protest. It's a spiritual encampment. And that, you know, I am one of just thousands of water protectors that are there. My tribe back home in northeastern California is Pitt River. I'm Ojibwe Band of Pitt River, and back home we've been fighting to protect our sacred place of Medicine Lake, the Medicine Lake Highlands. And we have water, sacred water, that travels all the way down through the Sacramento River to the San Francisco Bay. And if that water is contaminated, if that water is polluted through geothermal hydrofracking, that is, you know, thousands of people that will be affected by the contamination of their drinking water. And so that's the connection that I have with stopping the Dakota Access Pipeline. I first arrived in early September. There was a call out, and as you stated, there was a sacred fire that was lit April 1st, and through, you know, July, really August, September, it was the youth of Standing Rock that ran to Washington, D.C., that really brought an awareness and made the call out that there was a push into the position that put the tribe into a position to call people out and have them join. And so so I was one of many that answered that call and, you know, was out there in early September. In terms of my role there, again, it goes back to the sacred sites protection. So it's Lake Oahe that is, you know, where the pipeline is proposed to lay under. And so I was there as part of a sacred sites delegation that have been fighting to protect sacred sites all over Turtle Island. I want to acknowledge that as atrocious as it is of what's taking place here in Standing Rock, this is happening all across the country. It is happening all across the world of Indigenous peoples fighting to protect their homelands, fighting to protect their sacred places, fighting to protect their burial sites. In this day and age, Indigenous peoples, we do not have, you know, we are not recognized in terms of being able to have protection of our sacred places and sacred places of our burial and protection of our burial sites. And so that's very much been my role there. I was on the bridge last Sunday with the mass, you know, we're calling it police terrorism that took place, heavy water cannons, rubber bullets, sound cannons through the LRAD, compression grenades, concussion grenades, you know, heavy firing of tear gas canisters, short range firing of rubber bullets directly at water protectors, and ironically using the sacred water through the water cannons to drench people. Within the aftermath of that, you know, now really there were 300 people that were injured at the time, and so many of our friends and relatives now had, you know, from that night had onset hypothermia and now have pneumonia from a week ago Sunday.
What events happened yesterday? I've heard something that there was water sprayed. Can you give us more insight on that?
Sure. This was a week ago, last Sunday, and so I just want to clarify, you know, as of yesterday, there were a number of orders that came out, one from the governor of North Dakota that ordered an evacuation due to the extreme weather conditions. There's been it was 6 inches of snow, you know, that's now accumulating. And so it was on the night of November 20th where there were a number of people that had gathered on the bridge. There was an action in support to free Red Fawn, Red Fawn Falls. And there is a website now up, freeredfawn.org. Red Fawn was charged with attempted murder of a police officer. Her bail was set at $100,000. She just had court this last Monday. All the charges were dropped except for the guns charge. You can look on YouTube. You can Google her name. You can see it's very clear that Red Fawn did not have a weapon, never had a weapon, that a police officer had shot towards the ground. Bullets ricocheted up, and now she's being charged with firing that weapon.
Now, are these bullets, or are they rubber bullets?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Are these live ammo bullets, or are they rubber?
They're rubber bullets. They are rubber bullets being shot at close range.
Okay.
So there were a number of injuries. There was a number of medics that were just handing out water, handing out warm blankets to people. There was a young man that had two rubber bullets shot towards his head. They grazed his scalp and he needed 17 stitches. There was a young woman that is fighting to keep her arm. They were stating that she needed to have her arm amputated. A compression grenade was thrown directly at her, and she had a number of open wounds. There was an elder that suffered a heart attack, and luckily they were able to administer CPR within the camp and revive him. But there were serious injuries that took place that night.
Was this the elder that was tasered in the face?
I'm not exactly sure if they were tased or not, but I know that they did suffer. You know, there was heavy tear gas used throughout the camp and being aimed, you know, towards everyone on the bridge. And not only was it aimed towards everyone on the bridge, bystanders that were up on the hill, that were observers, legal observers, that were, you know, media that was filming what was taking place. Mm-hmm. I personally watched as, you know, I watched in shock and horror as bystanders had tear gas canisters fired at them on the hill when they were simply observing what was taking place.
This is so unfortunate, the amount of violence going on here. What weapons are being used by the authorities? Are they actually using more than just rubber bullets? They have to be using tear gas, rubber bullets.
Yes.
But are they bringing in bulldozers or tanks or anything like that?
They are. They're bringing in tanks. I'm not an active or military or veteran, but I do know that from, you know, what active military personnel who are on the ground with us, you know, standing in solidarity, they've stated that the tanks that are used on the ground, they haven't seen since they were in Iraq, and that they had absolutely no place here for unarmed civilians. We are completely nonviolent, you know, engaging in nonviolent direct actions that are taking place. There were makeshift shields, you know, that were used, particle board shields and lids, plastic lids, and that stopped. Those were held at the front where, you know, there were 50 officers shooting. And so those stopped a lot of the bullets. But if it wasn't for, you know, our young people that were willing to hold up those particle board sheets, then, you know, we could have had hundreds of more injuries.
Now, it's totally against human rights, civilians, to use the National Guard against their own people, whether non-Indigenous or Indigenous. This is a huge violation of rights against people of America. Do you think that the UN should step in and bring in UN troops to alleviate or to bring in peace troops? Has any of the elders contacted the UN?
Well, there has been contact with the UN. Absolutely. I work as the Special Projects Coordinator for the International Indian Treaty Council, and IITC has helped to coordinate bringing the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous issues, Chief Ed John down from Canada, and our staff member, Roberto, he was there with him documenting the atrocious human rights abuses from the dogs being unleashed onto people, you know, the vicious dog bites, to the close range firing of the rubber bullets, to the people that have been arrested. They were held in dog kennels for up to 6 hours.
No.
They were strip searched and treated, you know, extremely awfully, you know, in terms of the arrests, the felony charges that have been held against the water protectors range from reckless endangerment because they claim that they're putting the police officers within harm's way for having to arrest them, to inciting a riot, which is completely ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely ridiculous. Can you give us a portrait and image for us to the camps there? How many camps there? What are the conditions? Just so our audience has a picture view of what it's like there.
Sure. So there's people coming and going all of the time. So the estimated reports are that there's anywhere from 10 to 15,000 people. The camps grow larger on the weekends. Just this last holiday weekend, the camp grew in size. It just depends. You know, we've had this call for the mass eviction on December 5th. Mm-hmm. There's hundreds of smaller camps and sub kitchens. There is a Two-Spirit camp that has been established for our Two-Spirit relatives. There is a union organizers camp for, you know, our brothers and sisters that are union members that don't agree with the AFL-CIO letter from the president that stated that they were in support of DAPL and that the Indians had their chance for review, and you know that the fact that this was going to bring about thousands of jobs overshadowed, you know, any concerns that Native peoples had, and so that's, you know, beautiful to see the union members standing in solidarity. There are camps, you know, ranging from direct action tactics to grouped by tribe and grouped by region. And that's the way that our people camped. They camped with like-minded people. They camped with their families. My sister, Skybird, it was, you know, the first woman to have her baby out along the Cannonball River in her teepee. And so she's now across the way in the Sikonju camp over in the Rosebud camp. She's created an intentional women's wellness space with a women's teepee and is working to raise the funds to create a women's kitchen space, and just, you know, having that intentionality about having that space for her newborn baby. That is very much her act of resistance, was birthing the baby, just as our relatives have done for thousands of years. The teepee is representative of the rib cage and holding the baby inside of it. And so, you know, that act was one that she was very mindful that she was participating in as an act of resistance and as an act of being there on the ground. The baby was named Miniwichoni, which means water is life. Very beautiful little 6-week-old baby girl now. And so that's part of, again, my role at camp is to support her, support my family members that are there on the ground.
Blessings to your sister and her baby. Wow, that's an amazing story. And especially to give birth into such chaos. That's truly amazing. And a positive light to such a dark moment, you know. Recently, you know, we had the elections, and President-elect Trump was elected, obviously, and he has a shareholder. He's a shareholder in the Energy Transfer Partners. Do you think his role in the presidency is going to have a more negative impact on what's going on there?
Absolutely, and people can feel that sentiment within the camp. People are very aware that Trump has contributed, you know, between $500,000 and $1 million to energy transfers that they, you know, in turn contributed to his campaign. And so there's definitely some back scratching that took place. And, you know, with these evacuation orders that are now imminent and in place. You know, it's ridiculous to, you know, to state that Native peoples, you know, are required to vacate their own land. This is treaty land that, you know, they have the right to be on, and they have been on since time immemorial for the Standing Rock and Hunkpapa peoples, the, you know, Lakota and Dakota peoples. This is their way of life. This is how they lived. And so to state, you know, once again, the U.S. government, the Calvary, National Guard, you know, however it looks, them coming in to remove peoples within the wintertime, you know, during the winter camps that are now established, and to remove them from their land and their way of life is very much an act of war and an act of terrorism.
For those who are now just tuning in, we are live on The People Speak. I am your host, Sophia Ray, and my guest is Morningstar Gali. She is currently in North Dakota. She's bringing awareness to the unfortunate circumstances with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. You know, this is just so unfortunate. You know, it never seems to end. Things with, especially with the indigenous tribes, they are constantly put under scrutiny. If you could, if President-elect Trump or Kelsey Warren or somehow hear this show tonight or in the future, what do you have to say to them? What to inspire them to change their mind or reroute the pipeline?
Well, I very much, you know, would be hopeful that we could appeal to their heart and their mind and their spirit. But unfortunately, I think that we are past that point. I think that President Obama still has an opportunity in terms of stopping the Dakota Access Pipeline. The Army Corps of Engineers has a big role in stopping the Dakota Access Pipeline. There are people that are camped at Army Corps ACOE offices throughout the country. The call that we have put out is, you know, that you aren't going to continue to further invisibilize us as Native peoples on our own land. You're not going to push this issue aside and pretend that we no longer exist. There's teepees that have been set up. There's teepees erected in front of the Portland area office in Portland, Oregon, Omaha, Nebraska. You know, there's been a call out for people to put those teepees up, to put them up at, you know, the park in front of the White House, you know, and as a reminder that our people are here, they're surviving through the winter, they're not planning to go anywhere, and they will be here, and through the prayer and through the actions of thousands of people here that have come together, you know, hundreds of tribes, it's very historic and it's beautiful. You know that you're here on the ground, and you just know that you're a part of something that's so much bigger than you. You're part of a prophecy from 100 years ago that's being fulfilled. And so, you know, there is an awareness and mindfulness that the pipeline will be stopped, and that it will not go through any more sacred places and any more burial sites.
I hope so. I really do. My next question for you is, if when this deadline comes of people to be evicted off the land, out of the camps, what do you think will happen when they refuse to let up and not go? What do you think the authorities will inflict onto the people?
Well, we've already seen what they've inflicted to unleash water cannons. And this was directly, you know, for the listeners, this is directly fire, the water cannons from fire trucks, the hoses that are used to put out fires, were unleashed on the water protectors, on people that did not have, you know, proper rain gear and proper protection at 23 degrees, freezing temperatures. You know, this is what tax dollars and emergency relief funds for the state of North Dakota are being used on, you know, to hose our people down and, you know, to see these, you know, these rubber bullets, you know, and that and the harm that they inflict at short range to see, you know, I was one of hundreds that was tear gassed. And, you know, I was, you know, quite a ways away, and mm-hmm. to have elders there on the bridge, along with us, you know, the many young people, it was frightening. It was a war zone that we were in. And, you know, as I mentioned, we were completely unarmed. So, whatever actions that they take, in terms of attempting to remove the camp and attempting to dismantle the camp, we've already seen that when the treaty camp was set up, they spray painted teepees, they cut up tents and tarps, they confiscated sacred belongings. There were many reports that DAPL employees urinated on these belongings. Ugh. And so they were dumped off in a huge dumpster truck off the side of the road, in, you know, right in a dirt field. And so, you know, whatever actions they take, they're very much responsible for it. And knowing that there's young children at the camp, and knowing that there's elders at the camp, and knowing that we are there peacefully and there, but also there in prayer, and to resist the Dakota Access Pipeline from being built.
Is there a death toll? Has anybody died?
No, no.
I did hear, or I seen a video on YouTube of an elder who said that an 11-year-old girl was shot, and she died in the result. Are you aware of this?
I'm not aware of that. I know that there is some information. You know, there is, you know, some of the rumor mill. I haven't seen that video specifically. I haven't heard that within the camp. I hope that that's not true, but I know that there is some information that's going out that hasn't been accurate. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we just ask for those sources to be verified. There's a number of media sources that are putting out credible information that is being verified. I would say Brenda Norrell's Blogspot has great information that's up to date. Unicorn Riot Media has great video footage. They're there on the ground at the actions. And Myron Dewey with Digital Smoke Signals is always putting out up-to-date, accurate information.
Going back to your urinating, the urinating that you mentioned, what were the who was urinating and what were they urinating on?
So there was a camp that had been established, which was called the Treaty Camp. And they claimed the land by eminent domain and set up the camp as a roadblock so that DAPL could not come through with its equipment and with its drills to drill under the lake. Uh-huh. And when there was mass arrests, there was 129 water protectors that were arrested. All of the items were confiscated. And so the teepees that had been set up, there were wood stoves, there were, you know, people's, you know, it was their camps for the winter. Uh-huh. And all of those items were confiscated and they were placed into a dump truck. They were spray painted. The tents were cut up so that they could no longer be used. And those are the items that it was reported that DAPL employees urinated on. And so those items had to be burned, that none of those sacred items and, you know, survival items to get them through the winter were able to be salvaged.
Can you let our viewers, our listeners know, what public figures have been out there? What type of people, who are we seeing that's coming out there, bringing awareness, trying to help out?
So we're seeing people from all walks of life. We're seeing people that, you know, are within their, you know, professional jobs to everyday advocates and activists. I know I met some young Dene men that had hitchhiked up from the Navajo Nation, from the reservation, all the way in Arizona, had hitchhiked all the way to North Dakota to be there. There's a number of students and student groups, you know, that have, you know, pawned, you know, their material items so that they could have the gas money to drive out for the weekend and spend the weekend there at the camp. It really is. I have so many family members, so many extended, you know, family relations, so many relatives and friends, people that I've worked with in different capacities and worked, you know, from Sacred Sites Protection to my previous work as the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer, and just a variety of circles throughout Indian Country and beyond.
I'm going to take this moment to take a break. We're going to go on a break. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Bowser. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
And we are back on The People Speak. This is Sophia Ray, your host, and we are here with Morningstar Ghali. Morningstar, can you give, where are you at the moment? Are you inside the camp or are you outside of the camp?
I'm outside of the camp. They, and so when I say they, DAPL and Morton County Sheriffs have actively been scrambling the signal for the cell towers so that the encampment isn't able to receive phone calls and messages that come in. There's one small area that people are able to go to the top of the hill, but with the weather conditions right now, you know, that's minimal reception. And so I'm a few hours away. I'm driving in medical supplies. There has been a roadblock set up to where medical supplies and any camp supplies are no longer being let in on Highway 6 through Mandan. And so I'm driving around through Highway 12 through I've just driven across the state of Montana and coming back from California with boxes and bags of medical supplies, and we are bringing those back over to the camp.
We have a caller on the line. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Mike in California. Morningstar, I had a few questions. What is the name of the camp? Are there really 7,000 people at the largest camp? And you mentioned someone the oil people urinating on native belongings, is that the general attitude of the oil workers, the police, and the National Guard towards the protesters, one of disrespect?
Absolutely. That's what I've personally witnessed, is the attitude. We are in North Dakota, where it is very much, you know, the tribal peoples here, this isn't anything new, where they have encountered heavy racism, and this issue with the pipeline has only exacerbated, you know, the racial tensions. The pipeline was initially proposed to go through the city of Bismarck, and the Bismarck residents that are mainly non-native were able to stop and oppose it. And so this pipeline has been rerouted to 1 mile above the reservation. And so, so yes, there really are, you know, between 8,000 to 10,000 people within the camps. There are a variety of camps. There is the main camp, which is known as the Overflow Camp of Ocheti Sakon. There is the Sacred Stone Camp. There is the Red Warrior Camp. And within those camps are sub-camps and sub-kitchens. There's an amazing kitchen that's just across the mountains from where I live in northeastern California. There's the Klamath Basin Camp in Hoopa, California, that has very dedicated elders that are there serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know. And, you know that you can go there for a hot meal. You know that you're going to have great food, homemade, you know, clam chowder to homemade fry bread when you're there within their kitchen. The main kitchen has been significantly scaled down because it was feeding thousands of people every day. And so there's been a number of sub kitchens that have been established to help ease that burden.
And are there families there? I mean, children, babies?
Yes, I have my children. I am currently traveling with a 7-month-old baby, my 3-year-old, 3 teenage girls. We are there. We are there with our families. We are there in prayer. We are there in unity. I have aunties and uncles and cousins and you name it. They're there in the camp.
Have you seen, I mean, is it just outright blatant racism where the police or the authorities are yelling racial slurs at the protesters while they, you know, fire upon them and that kind of thing? I mean, it just sounds like a very, very,
it's very high, highly charged. I have a friend that, you know, had onset hypothermia from the water cannons being fired on her last Sunday. She left for a family emergency, had found out that her son had made attempted suicide, and she went to the hospital to go be with her son. She's crossing the street, you know, this mother in distress. She now has pneumonia from what happened a week ago. She's under, you know, high stress levels, and she's crossing the street to go be by her son's side, and is called a prairie N-word as she's crossing the street by a man with his small children out the window. I've had friends that were physically hit by DAPL vehicles. There was an incident of a man waving a gun and, you know, attempting to run people over as they were there, you know, actively standing their ground and actively trying, you know, to that effort to stop the pipeline. And they have the right to be there. They have the right to congregate. They have the right to be there in prayer. And my friend isn't, you know, she isn't a small person by any means. And she was knocked on her feet by this DAPL truck running, you know, attempting to run her over.
You know, all of this needs to be documented with video or, you know, some kind of incident list because the mainstream media portrays the protesters as instigators, possible, you know, inflaming the situation. You know, that's the view I think that a lot of people are getting. And the other thing, someone wanted to know, can you elaborate about the prophecy of the black snake? Because it seems to be, is there a lot of talk about that in the camp? People really believe in that?
Sure. People are there in ceremony and in prayer. I'm not.
Tell us what it means. Tell us the whole story of the Black Stick legend. What its origin and everything like that.
Sure. So it is available online, the complete story. You can search that on the internet. You can look it up and just type in, you know, Black Snake Dapple prophecy. And so what we, you know, have been told is that this black snake was going to come through and, you know, that the people were going to stand together and the people were going to come together in unity and that the people were going to defeat the black snake. And so that is the prophecy that has been envisioned. As I mentioned, people are there very much in prayer. There's been, you know, many groups, you know, that have offered songs and dances from, you know, tribes across the country. The night that we were out on the bridge, it was beautiful to witness. There were bird singers and dancers that came all the way from Southern California. They were standing right there on the front line singing an entire set of songs. They were not hit by the water cannon once. They were not tear gassed once. They were not hit by rubber bullets once. I was concerned for them. And they stood there and they sang their songs. And it was in, you know, in resistance and resilience, and it was absolutely beautiful. I joined in dancing with them, and it was very much a powerful moment that you knew that, you know, there is this prayer that is continuing, that although people, so many people were injured that night, that, you know, those prayers and those blessings were still being offered.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. We have another caller on the line. Let's take this call. Caller, where are you calling from? And what is your name?
Texas. My name is Sid.
Sid, where are you calling from? Texas? Go ahead with your question.
Dallas, Texas. All right. I know that you're worried about the possible leaking into the water, whatever, the oil. But what are the, what have y'all done, like science-wise, like bring, you know, like scientists or whatever, or what, to say that the pipeline would be, how much, you know, how bad it would be versus how good it would be, or what? It's hard to phrase this question. But have y'all brought in, like, scientists or geologists or whatever to tell you that this line would pollute the water, considering that there's already been a line running underneath that property for years?
And I'm sorry, I missed what the question was.
Have y'all had, like, any experts come in, like scientific experts or whatever, to tell you that you have such and such percentage of a chance that the water will be contaminated by this oil, and whenever there's been a pipeline that's run underneath the water source for years?
I think
sure.
What he's trying to say
we know that pipelines break. We know that there's oil spills. It's not a matter of you know, whether or not they do. It's a matter of when, really. You know, there's news reports all of the time of oil pipelines breaking. There's news reports all the time of, you know, oil spills and contamination. You know, we look to the Gold King mine down in New Mexico, that, you know, the spill that took place recently, where, you know, people's entire cornfields and their annual crops and their drinking water was contaminated. You know, I've heard, I was driving through Casper, Wyoming, and, you know, a waitress was, you know, we were the first customers that, you know, she could point out, you know, we're traveling up to participate in the encampment. And so she, you know, at the time had commented, she was from North Dakota herself, and had commented, well, just let the pipeline be built, and when it spills, just sue them, just sue the U.S. government. But that's not an option for us. It's not an option for our future generations. It's not an option. And it's not only a fight for Native peoples. This is for all peoples. This pipeline is proposed across 4 states. And so this is for all of our, you know, children and grandchildren, and for the ability for them to be able to drink water. When we say that water is sacred, that's not just a slogan. We are born within water, within our mother's wombs. Our bodies are 80% water. We know that we need water in order to survive. The night that we were tear gassed, we made our way down to the river. Our bodies instinctively knew and told us to go to the river because we needed that oxygen. We needed to be able, you know, to clear, you know, the air and clear our lungs from being so disoriented. And the water and the oxygen in the water helps to do that. And so, yeah, the scientific documents are there, the information is there, you can look up the court case online, all of that information is available, but we're not just going by science-based knowledge, we're going by our traditional knowledge, by, you know, what our elders tell us and what's been passed on, that we know that it's our responsibility to protect this water.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. It's pertaining to, did the government try to pay off any elders to quit, you know, to get them off land? You know, have you heard anything about this?
Are you talking about recently or historically?
Well, recently, since it started back in 2014.
Sure. So there's rumors. One of my good friends, I mentioned I worked as the tribal historic preservation officer for my tribe. One of my good friends was the TIPO directly for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, was actively involved in this case. There, you know, was not any offer at that time. I'm not, you know, an official tribal representative, so I don't want to misspeak for the tribe, but as we know historically, that especially right now, especially in winter time, that there is, you know, a history of those dirty, you know, transactions that are made. For my tribe, for Pitt River, it was 47 cents an acre that, you know, was pushed on us as Native peoples, that the Pacific Gas and Electric Company sent checks within Christmas cards right before Christmas time, right in the middle of winter, as people are trying to survive. When people went and cashed those checks, not knowing exactly what they were for, they lost the right to their lands. They lost the right to their allotment lands. And PG&E, you know, was, it was a slimy deal, and that was the basis of our land claims. And so we can see that. We can see, you know, throughout history of Native peoples being coerced out of their land, being pushed off of it. And so that's very much what's happening today. I don't know the ins and outs of the, you know, official dealings that are taking place with the number of tribal councils that are involved and the number that are currently consulting, but I know that there are thousands of people within the encampment that have stated that there is no negotiation and that they are there to stay.
Totally hoodwinked them. That is, oh my God, that is terrible. Is there any information that you just want to offer, anything that's important, you know, something that you feel that our listeners should know?
Well, I feel that however people can support, it is so needed at this time. I just got a note that it's blizzard, that there's a huge blizzard at camp right now. So we're, you know, trying to figure out whether we're going to continue on, or, you know, we have small children, so we need to ensure their safety. But, you know, I, you know, however people can donate, if people are not prepared to come and camp in the snow, you know, there's many ways that they can support. Contact, you know, your local to state representatives, call the Army Corps of Engineers, call on President Obama, call the White House line, call your local news stations, and, you know, request that they stop with the biased reporting and the reporting that is unfactually based. You know, when they said that the water cannons were only used, Morton County Sheriffs said as of last Sunday in their news, their press conference, that the water cannons were only used to put out the fires that the people had set. And there's clear video footage that they were the ones that set the fires, that they were the ones, you know, shooting the tear gas canisters and those grenades, and that they were the ones that were setting those fires. And so, and you can see the water being sprayed directly on the people. You can see the icicles hanging off of the barbed wire fences. And so, you know, we're here and we're going to continue to be here. My relatives are, you know, building, you know, structures that will keep them warm and keep their children warm throughout the winter, I encourage you to go to the website of the West Coast Women's Media Collective. They are, you know, attempting to buy a yurt. This is a group of Indigenous women from Canada that have come down that are doing some great reporting and some great interviews with people. Mm-hmm. Again, Digital Smoke Signals, Myron Dewey. There's so much support that's needed for the medical collective and for the legal teams that are on site that are completely under-resourced and are helping, you know, the hundreds that have been arrested, tending to, you know, the hundreds of injuries. The medic team was just amazing. And so that information is available. The direct site for the tribe is standingrock.org. But you can look online, and there's a number, you know, of sites that will list, you know, the factual reports and stories that are coming out.
For those who want to go out there and want to support and be a part of this movement, where do they go when they get out there?
And where do they go when they get to the camp?
Yes.
So it's in Cannonball, North Dakota. And so it's right directly off of the Standing Rock Reservation on Highway 1806. You can't come directly from Bismarck now because the road has been blocked. So you'll have to take Highway 6 to Highway 12. But that is where they would enter in. As I mentioned, there's a number of camps, a number of camp entrances. There's the main camp of Ocheti Sikon. There's the camp across the river, the Rosebud Sikonju Camp. And then directly behind that is the Sacred Stone Camp, where that initial sacred fire had been lit.
What should people expect when they get out there?
They should expect freezing conditions. As I mentioned, there is a blizzard as of this moment, inches of snow. So be prepared, you know, to drive in that if you're not used to it, in terms of having, you know, snow chains for your tires or studded tires. You know, what the wizard winter blizzard conditions in North Dakota would be. Layers upon layers of warm clothing, winter boots, all of that. Don't expect, you know, expect to come as self-sufficient as you can be. You know, hot meals are, you know, hard to come by. Showers are hard to come by. And so, you know, be prepared to stand here with the water protectors. The conditions aren't ideal, but I feel, and I very much feel, that the people that are here have, there's a call that's been made for them to be here.
If you had to guess, how long would do you think or feel that this can continue on for?
So the deadline is for January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of whether or not, the pipe, that's the deadline for the pipeline to be built by, every day that the pipeline's not built, it's costing Dakota Access and Energy Transfers thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so that's the goal, is to stop it. Play into, you know, the financing that's taking place. I would also recommend that people divest through, there's 21 banks that have been listed as funding the Dakota Access Pipeline. Wells Fargo and Chase Bank are the two majors, but you can, you know, type in, there's a number of great articles out there, 21 banks that are funding the Dakota Access Pipeline.
If people want to donate, you know, supplies and stuff, what supplies are direly needed?
What supplies are direly needed?
Yes.
There's a shortage of propane and gas because the towns of Bismarck and Mandan are refusing to sell propane and gas to any of the water protectors. Mm-hmm. As of right now, there's a shortage of hay for the horses. You know, firewood, especially in these snow conditions. I'm standing outside right now. You know, I apologize, but you know, I'm standing outside with no jacket on right now. I mean, it's extreme temperatures, and so you know, whatever can be contributed in terms of, you know, contact or look up the site for the medic and wellness tents. And you know, there's a number of cold medicines that are needed because so many people again are recovering, you know, from the flu and from pneumonia and the onset hypothermia from the water cannons as of a week ago.
So food, you know, food, water, gas, propane gas, hay, firewood, medical supplies, all these things are needed for these people. And for those listeners out here who are listening to this show, if you can help out, please reach out and help out. This is an important matter. I think, you know, if everybody comes together, we can triumph this matter. We are coming to the end of our show. Is there anything else that you want to bring awareness to?
I'm willing to give out my email address. Mm-hmm. If there's, you know, specific information that people are looking for or specific contacts that they're attempting to reach, my email address is mstargali@gmail.com. And, you know, please be patient. It is, you know, we do have limited internet access within the camp, but know that I will respond. I will get back to you.
Can you repeat your email address one more time?
mstar, my last name, Gali, G-A-L-I, @gmail.com.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, it's an honor to have you on. I would like to, you know, keep up and keep in contact with you and just to see what's going on. We always don't get the real deal on the news, on the mainstream news. We're total blackout. They're not showing exactly what's going on. They're only giving us what they want us to know.
Sure.
It was an honor to have you on. Thank you, especially at such short notice. Again, one more time for your email or any other contact information.
Sure, mstargali@gmail.com. I want to encourage people to go to the web links for the winterized camp by Wash Dewi. That's WASTEWINYOUNG. I can send that link by email. The Winterize Camp fundraiser, you know, to have, you know, warm and dry conditions, you know, for people throughout the camp.
This is the end. Thank you so much. Blessing to you and your family and all the water protectors. I want to thank our engineer Don, our producer Mike Kim. Everybody, if you can help out, please do. Let us unite through love and light. Everyone have a good night. Thank you.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.